study that was focused by geography to one that is more focused by global account. Now, that isn't to say that geographies go away, because, of course, every country has its own laws, its own customs, frequently its own language, different from ours. And our philosophy has always been, as I mentioned from my predecessor, to have local management running those subsidiaries. And digital does not have lots of expats everywhere running its subsidiaries. Almost inevitably, the person running any major country is a native citizen of that country and all of the staff and so forth. But we need to be able to look at, from our information technology perspective, an account by global cut. So be able to look at the companies I mentioned and many others, all of the banks, the worldwide banks, they want you to deal with them on a global basis. They want uniform terms and conditions. They want a strategy around information technology that helps them. Many of our largest companies, global information is their business. For example, Reuters is a very big account for digital. Their whole business is global information. It's no value to have just local geography organization. When we talk to Reuters, we talk about digital's ability to support their infrastructure in 100 countries. So it's an enormous opportunity for digital to organize that way. Our competitors are still organized by geography, although Gerstner at IBM has also stated an intention to move his company to a more global focus, organized by industry, in his case. In our case, we've made it strictly by account. And it's a transition we're going through, and right in the Q3 that we just ended, and in Q4 now, it's quite fragile. I mean, we're making a change in the way we've done business for 37 years to the way we're going to do business in the future. And we're doing that while we're making a lot of other change in digital. No alternative, in my view, you just got to get on with it. I hope this doesn't turn out to be one of those things I regret, but at this point, it looks good. And the customers are responding very favorably. The sales force is responding. So this is a very different model, though, totally different. Account teams for a large customer that does business in all these different accounts are now aligned by that account. And so there's an account manager, one of the highest level people in the company, that is responsible for planning all of the resources and support for that account on a global basis, as opposed to each country looks after the subsidiary in that country. So it makes a very different model.
But you think this is the model that...
It's what customers want. And what we're trying to do, the big customers, what we're trying to do at Digital is listen to the customers and organize ourselves to deliver the products and services the way they want to be serviced. That's the issue. It's also much more affordable. What happens is that in, let's take Europe for example, it is not cost effective to have the same level of network specialists, for example, in every country. It's much more cost effective to have a strong team of very competent professionals that are pan-European. Now, in some of the large countries like Germany, France, the UK, they're large enough, Italy, they can support a network infrastructure team, for just to use that as an example, in that country. But many of the smaller countries, you really can't afford to have that much infrastructure in those smaller countries. But for a cluster of such countries, you can cover that pan-European. And so the globalization lets you address that issue.
The shape, though, of the technology business has changed so dramatically in the last couple of years. Would you basically extrapolate? Would you say this is the way things are going? Or do you see something really dramatic coming down the road?
Well, there are going to be some very dramatic changes. It's interesting to see how the computer industry has always had change, but the rate of change has been accelerating in the late 1980s and will continue. There's no question that this transition from proprietary to open is going to continue. It's not complete yet. If you look at the very good results that our competitor at IBM has been turning in, it's largely because their proprietary business on mainframes has seen a resurgence that was unforecasted by the analyst or by IBM. There was, and also good management on the part of Lou Gerstner and his team. They've done a good job. But if you look at it and you say, gee, does that mean the proprietary large installations of that type are the wave of the future? Virtually nobody believes that, including IBM. And so that transition is going to continue, and we've only seen the tip of the iceberg in terms of the impact that's going to have. This whole globalization, the free exchange of information like you're seeing today exploding on the internet, there are going to be many implementations of internet-like networks on the world. The opportunities are going to be incredible. The impact on society is going to be unbelievable, unforecastable. This is like, in my view, a comparison with the Industrial Revolution, and is going to be equally as wrenching and as impactful in its scope. What you will see, we're living in the most exciting time you could possibly be living in. We are, you and I, and fortunately digital, right in the midst of an information revolution that's comparable to the Industrial Revolution of the previous century. And what you're going to see is the same kind of impact. And in my view, on the most part, it'll be very positive. It'll make it possible for lagging countries to have access to information and education, healthcare, many other things that would otherwise take decades, they'll be able to have instant access to. Even within our own domestic country, there'll be a tremendous opportunity for improvements in education and healthcare as a result of information technology, greater bandwidth, ever and ever less expensive computing. So it's an exciting time, and we're part of that. So the amount of change that's going to be occurring in computing is really quite dramatic.
Well, digital really pioneered networks, and you've got an expertise in it. How do you take advantage or in some way shape what happens with the internet?
Well, that's a very good point. Digital really did, as you observe, largely invent interactive computing. I mean, that was Ken's whole vision for the company when he founded the company. And the novel idea that you didn't have to go through a central computing staff and high priests and all of that to have access to data. And it was a pioneering breakthrough concept for which he has been appropriately recognized. Along the way, we also invented distributed computing and networking, as you mentioned. Our value proposition to our customers going forward builds on that foundation. The difference is, in the 1980s and 70s, when we were so successful with the PDP-11 and the VAX architectures, digital was able to engineer all of the components of that distributed network. The network itself, the protocols, the software, the operating systems, the CPUs, all of the routers and hubs, everything was all one company's engineered product. In the open systems of the 1990s, there are a multitude of vendors that design each of those components. And the complex problem that customers have today is how do you get the same kind of performance from a network that you used to get from one that was homogeneous that is designed by a single vendor with a heterogeneous network that has products from many different vendors, software products, hardware products, network products, from all kinds of vendors. Who can help you with that problem? Digital is clearly the best company to deal with in solving that problem, and that is the core part of our value proposition going forward. Now, what you'll see, though, is there's extensions. Like today, most networks are wired networks, you know, either copper wire or fiber or something. Emerging, clearly, are wireless networks. Our belief is by the year 2000, there'll actually be more nodes every year that are connected to computers that are wireless than are wired. Tremendous opportunity for digital. We've invested in developing software that enables you to walk around the building. We call this roamabout software. You have a portable computer like the one I've got over there with the appropriate software and the appropriate building. You can walk around anywhere and be connected on the fly with the data available in that facility on the server. Utilize it without constraint. You can walk from one cell to another and not have the data disappear. I mean, nobody else has that. Digital is investing in all kinds of technology of that type going forward. And we'll undoubtedly have some alliances and partnerships with telecom companies and other companies in cellular and so forth. Don't have any to announce today, but undoubtedly there will be that kind of thing, taking advantage of our skill in networking and software and wireless capability with their skill at broadcast and billing and all the other things. So, tremendous opportunities, building on the foundation that you mentioned.
Well, how do you see the commercialization of the internet being used to your advantage?
Well, in the case of the internet, Digital was one of the first companies to offer a internet firewall, a web server, that protects your sensitive data internally. And as you probably know, we provide internet security for the White House. We had a long history of understanding network security, and that's a major big issue dealing with the internet. Enterprises, for individuals, maybe it's not a big deal, but for companies, the security of their data and the ability to connect to the internet effectively and use it for commerce, but at the same time not expose all of their sensitive data to competitors or people that have malcontent, clearly is a major issue. And Digital does provide security firewalls and web servers, but there are many other exploitations. We for example, we're the first company to offer test drives of our products over the internet. More than a year ago, we offered alpha machines that a customer can dial up on the internet and actually load their software on the machine remotely and run the machine and see the performance of their application on the alpha system over the internet. And we have thousands of customers that have done that. Thousands. We would have never reached before. Unbelievable. In addition to that, today, if you address our homepage on the internet, you have access to something like 6,000 pages of information about our products and services and a point-and-click kind of way to get to that data. So you can call up and for example, find out, well, what's the latest in Digital's PC line? What are the latest prices? What's the latest in digital software offerings? How do I buy it?
Is there a more direct way to commercialize that other than to provide
Well, we're selling to other companies to do the same things. We're selling the web servers to other companies, and we're providing systems integration expertise. In many cases, a company would come to Digital and say, we want to take advantage of the internet for commerce, but we don't know how. So it'd say, gee, we can provide the firewall, we can provide training, we can provide support services, we can help you exploit this opportunity. And so we do that through our systems integration capability.
These guys are shuffling around like we're coming toward the end. Is that true?
Let me ask a couple more questions.
Sure.
I just wanted some warning if we are.
We're getting close.
If you looking both backwards and forward, mm-hmm. the last couple of years, the next couple of years, what would be the milestones that you think you've hit that are indicative of the progress you've made so far, and what milestones should we be looking for?
That's an excellent question. Actually, the milestones...
hit a good one.
No, there are a lot of good questions. You've asked a lot of good questions, Michael, and I appreciate it. By the way, I appreciate the fact that your articles have always been balanced. I mean, when you write about... That's all I ask. It is, but you don't always get it from the media. If you ask for, in my job function, do I expect every article to be upbeat and positive and wonderful? No, because in our turnaround, it hasn't all been upbeat and positive. There's nothing very positive about having to lay off thousands of people and closed facilities and that, but you expect balance, and I've gotten it from you, and I appreciate that, and so do our other employees. But when you come back to this question, yeah, I think that when we made the assessment, I made the analysis of what was wrong, and I got my management team together, and we discussed it, and we agreed on what was fundamentally wrong, and then we agreed on an approach to how do we get out of it, and I want to stress the point that I work with a team of people, large team. There's a small team that reports directly to me, but when we go through one of these exercises, we employ a lot of people in the process. It's Digital's culture and style to do that, and to try and draw out the best ideas and as much help as you can in architecting the change. And we spent probably a couple months on that, and then we had an architecture that, not perfect, is largely okay, and you've got to get going. And we announced that to the world in July, and we began implementing. At that point, my confidence was above neutral, certainly, but it wasn't great. We'd just come off losing quarters, many of them. The company's financial position had deteriorated, although the balance sheet was still strong. The bonds had been downgraded, and it was not a pretty picture. It was a continuation of the previous picture. And so that's not what I was hired to do. And so at that point, you're looking at it and saying, gee, I need some proof points that this is going to work. Well, Q1 came in pretty much like we expected and the analyst expected. Wasn't a good quarter, of course, it was a lost quarter, but it was kind of in the ballpark, a little better than some expected. Q2 came in dramatically better than was expected. Mm-hmm. Last May, I set a goal for this company very publicly, perhaps foolishly, but it was my judgment that we needed to be aggressive, that by the end of the calendar year, we would achieve a profit from operations, at least break even. It turned out we did better than that. We not only broke even from operations, we achieved an overall profit for the company of 7 cents a share. The street was astounded, and the stock responded very smartly. That was kind of a first proof point. It was like, okay, maybe this thing's going to work. I mean, maybe they're actually going to get it together. Now, there are many others. During the first couple of quarters, the alpha sales began to show improvement. Our Unix sales were up 100%. Alpha sales are up over 150%. The PC business continued to grow 75% quarter over quarter. So, gee, there was a lot of data that says the things that they're putting in place are growing. We sold our storage heads business to Quantum, got that behind us, raised some cash. One of the things that we managed extremely well during the last year was the disposition of assets. The company has raised now, since we started, $1 billion in cash to pay for the transition of employees that had to leave the company and the closing of facilities that had to be closed. We were able to generate cash by dispositions of non-strategic assets. This doesn't get recognized too often, but it's a major big deal. And where were you going to get the $1 billion to do the restructure? So I'm very proud of that, by the way, which I didn't mention in terms of things we're proud of. I'm very proud of the people that contributed and worked hard to make that a possibility. But that was a proof point. Gee, we generated profit. We generated cash from dispositions. We restructured and downsized appropriately. We're getting our costs in line. We stated very clearly what the objectives are for engineering as a percent of revenues, for SG&A as a percent of revenues, for many of the various parameters on the P&L and the balance sheet, and we're hitting them. Then comes Q3. You say, well, okay, then Q2, maybe it was a fluke. What about Q3? Can they show kind of profit? Well, I don't know, because Q3 for digital, the first calendar quarter, is almost always a down quarter from Q2, which is, of course, the reason being that most companies are on a calendar year, and most of the purchasing occurs at the end of the year, and then they start over planning for the next year and so forth. We managed to hold revenue flat. We hadn't done that in a long time, if ever, but managed to hold revenue flat and actually improved our profitability a little bit. So there's another proof point. Now we're in Q4. Analysts expect that we'll be profitable in Q4. Certainly that's my expectation. There are no guarantees in this business. We enter a quarter with something under a third of the quarter booked. So you've got to sell and ship two-thirds of the quarter in the quarter. When I joined the company, you typically had a year booked. You know, it was a very different environment. Now you're looking at a situation where third of the quarter is booked, you better sell and ship the rest. Making a forecast is nonsense in that kind of an environment. On the other hand, I expect to remain profitable this quarter. Will it be enough profit? Well, I don't know. Is it ever enough profit? Well, probably not. But let's hope that it's enough profit that we can be profitable for the year. There's that chance. If we did good in Q2, we did better in Q3, we've got a loss in Q1 to overcome. If we have a good Q4, we might overcome it. We'd be profitable for the year, first time since 1990. I would say that'd be a very important proof point that things are working. Then you're going to have, in my view, if we pull that off, the next proof point is, are we going to be profitable in 96, and are we going to grow the revenue? Are we going to start seeing improvement in the financials? Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be the odd quarter. Q1 of next year comes to mind in particular, because where we have a negative outcome. And I'm not saying we're forecasting it, but if you happen. Because the reason is, in Q1, the summer quarter, half our business being in Europe, and about half of Europe goes on vacation for extended period of time, 6 weeks in many cases, 8 weeks sometimes. And so your orders dry up in that August time period. July, August is very weak and in Europe. Since your expenses don't go away, this very much impacts your revenue. So if you look on a historical basis, digital typically has a drop of about 20%, which on $4 billion is $800 million in revenue from one quarter to another quarter, and that's enormous revenue decline to overcome. Now, we're obviously aware of it since it happens every year, so we're working to not let it happen this year in total and to get our costs in line and to stay in the black. But it wouldn't be life-threatening if you went back into the red. The issue is, on an annual basis, are you able to increase the profit? And so that's what people should be looking for. And do you continue to see good growth in Alpha? Are you seeing that turbo laser well received by the marketplace? Or is Digital's customer base receiving our messages around software strategy positively? How did Deekus go next week? So there's a lot of proof points. I'm very confident. I've never been more confident than I am today about the outlook for this company. I'm very confident. That doesn't mean that it's over by any means. We are making the turnaround. We have not yet turned it around. There's a lot more work to be done. There's more that has to be done on the cost side. We're working through some strategy issues that have to be done well. And there's execution that has to be flawless across the board. We will have some missteps. That's the nature of it. It's like in running that marathon. There's going to be sometimes some hills. There are going to be sometimes, you know, you twist your ankle a little bit. That's okay. You just got to keep going. That's the kind of process we're in. Now, me personally, I think you can tell from this interview, I find this very motivating. It's exciting. It's a tremendous opportunity, and most of our employees seem to feel the same way.
Is there a point at which you'll be able to grow the company headcount?
I don't know. You couldn't say no, because it's impossible to forecast how things will turn out. For example, in the systems integration side of your business, headcount is what you deliver. You know, when you deliver consulting services. And so that part of the business might grow. Other parts might go down. I think that the more relevant question is there ever a point in which you can allow productivity to go down? The answer is no. So we have to have more and more computers manufactured with fewer and fewer resources, not just people. Less inventory, less cash employed, you know, less physical assets. I mean, just
is it a function of productivity and revenue, that if the productivity is going up, and if revenue goes up fast enough, then you just simply will need more people?
Well, you might, but again, it's a matter of by business unit, what source of resource do you need? At this moment, we're hiring people, and we're also letting some people go. I mean, it's the nature of it. We got skills mix issues. World's changing. A lot of people I need to hire to support new skills and new opportunities in the marketplace. Others you need to let go because their skills are not relevant and you can't employ them productively for the customer. Sounds harsh, it's reality.
I take it that you're, if I could sort of ask sort of a wrap-up question, that you're in this, you weren't brought in as a hired gun for 2 years.
I'm in this for the long pull.
Right. What kind of, how would you like to be able to look back if you would say from retirement in 10 years,
okay,
15 years, what kind of a legacy would you like to leave?
Well,
in addition to the, you know, this essence of the sense of the turnaround.
There are several things, and you can have the long-winded answer or the short answer. The longer version is you want to look back with pride on what was accomplished. Like the company was facing an enormous crisis, there's no question. We've already talked about the analyst assessment of the situation at the time I got this position. You'd like to look back and say that during my opportunity to lead, the management team was able, with the help of all the employees on a worldwide basis, to restructure that enterprise, to get it back on the right track, and to resume its profitable growth in its position of acknowledged leadership. And during all of that, you maintain the core values of the company, which are critically important. My core values are quite congruent with those of my predecessor. We maintain the things like integrity, respect for individuals, respect for the customer and customer value, deliver real value, don't overcharge the customer, deliver real value, an innovative company that's focused on individual and collective excellence. You know, all of those core values that really define the company, as opposed to the bricks and mortar of the mill, for example. It's the values that define the company. All of those remained intact, and you added a couple that were important to you. In my case, accountability, which was lacking. We added accountability, and we achieved a return to an environment where people enjoy working here, are proud to be part of Digital Equipment Corporation. And when you ask somebody, well, what company do you work for? And they say, I work for Digital, the response is, oh, that's a great company. That's the short form. That's how you know you succeeded. It's like I focus mostly, you know, you got a lot of constituents. If you're the CEO, you are responsible to the board of directors and therefore, of course, the shareholders who, after all, own the company. I always try to remember and remind my staff, my employees, this is not our money. This money belongs to the shareholders. We are chartered with investing this money with an intention of providing a reasonable return to those shareholders. So that's one group you're responsible to. You're responsible to customers. As I said many times, if you do not satisfy your customers delivering real value, services and products, you are out of business, in which case you cannot discharge your responsibility to the shareholder. But I personally feel, more than these other two constituents, to be quite clear, a responsibility to the employees. My style is to be a leader as opposed to a manager. To be a leader, you have to have the support of the people. You can't dictate to people, you will do this because I'm the boss. That's not my style. My style is to say, I've assessed it, I've analyzed it, I believe this is what we should do, these are all the reasons we should do it, and I need your support. I need you to follow. And you want to persuade. So my style is to persuade and to be very open and candid and lay it all out. And it's a big deal. I take my personal focus is on being recognized by our employees as having done a good job. If 5 or 6 years, regardless of any other outcomes, if the people that supported the company during this time say, Bob was a good leader, for me that's enough. That's what I'm looking for. To be recognized as the appropriate leader for this particular time in the company's history. Ken was a quintessential entrepreneur and leader for starting the company and for managing it for most of its history. He did an exceptional job. I'd like for people to be able to say that I did an exceptional job at this particular time and that I was the right leader for this particular environment. So that's what I'm aiming for.
I really appreciate you taking the time. You've been very generous with your time.
Well, I feel passionately about it. And I also, like I say, I'm not that generous with the ones that don't write a balanced report. You know, it's very simple. I give everybody some time, but you get a lot of time because, number one, you have a 300,000 circulation, and many of them either supply digital, work for digital, or know somebody that does. And then also, like I say, I appreciate the balance in the articles. Now, if anything I've said here is too goofy or crazy, or you really wonder what I meant, and you'd like to follow up, please contact my professionals here in communications. They'll help you.
I think nothing was particularly goofy, but if it were, they would be calling me.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Well, Michael, it's good to see you.
Good to
Thank
see you.
You.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck with the store.
Thanks.